Here with us on the State Capitol Report, I'm Kate Archer-Kent. When Wisconsinites head to the polls tomorrow, one question on the ballot will ask if the office of the state treasurer should be eliminated from the state's constitution through an amendment. It is the final step to change Wisconsin's constitution. The amendment already passed both chambers of the legislature over two consecutive sessions of the legislature, and previous efforts to do away with the office over several decades never made it to the ballot. Here's one of the sponsors of the amendment, Republican Representative Michael Schraw of Appleton, on the bill in 2015.
The current state treasurer and his predecessor both campaigned heavily on the platform that the office needed to be eliminated. Both were elected by the majority of the electorate. Our constituents are intelligent enough to decide for themselves whether or not they see value in this outdated and simply symbolic relic of the past.
Ed Miller is a political science professor at UW-Stevens Point. He's co-director of the Center for the Small City. His areas of expertise include legislative process, American politics, public policy, and health policy. Ed, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
Well, before we get deeply here into the state treasurer referendum, let's take a moment to remember former Wisconsin Attorney General Peg Lautenschlager, the only woman to hold the post, died early Saturday from cancer, age 62. Her career in public service spanned several decades. Can you tell us about her contribution to the state?
Well, she's very heavily in the area, certainly, as you mentioned, law. That she was involved in, I mean, she was, a district attorney. She was the federal attorney for the Eastern District of Wisconsin. She ultimately was elected as attorney general. She did run for congressional office and almost beat, as a Democrat, it's interesting, she almost beat Petrie, who was a Republican who represented around the Oshkosh-Appleton area.
So now, and she also made contributions here at WPR on our Week in Review program as well, and so we've been thinking about her a lot this weekend as well. Basically, too, she really had a lot of areas where she had made an effort, made a difference through law.
Right. She was interested in, like voting rights, environmental protection, and health care in particular, especially after she had gotten cancer. But she was especially interested in those areas. She ultimately actually lost in the primary for attorney general, for her second term as attorney general. And that was because of there was a conviction, for drunken driving. And then there was an issue of using the state car because she actually didn't move to Madison, interestingly enough, when she was attorney general.
Well, let's move on now to the spring election tomorrow. When voters look at the ballot, one item they'll make the call on is the future of the state treasurer. Let's look back a bit. What is the history of the state treasurer position?
Well, the state treasurer position was actually created in the original Constitution, which we still have here, I should say. We're one of the few states that actually has the original Constitution. Many states have revised their Constitution. And the state treasurer had a whole variety of duties having to do with financial matters, as you can imagine. Most important duty, essentially, was the responsibility for taking care of most of the finances of the state, as the name would apply. Related to that, they were, involved with investments, the state investments. The ones that are most notable in recent times, after most of those were removed from the treasurer's office, but the treasurer still had the area of what's called EdVest, which is investment for college program. And so
529 funds. Mm-hmm.
Right. Did manage that fund until fairly recently. In addition to that, one that people have heard various treasurers come on TV and so forth with was unclaimed property. And that's an important thing because if people don't act on, like, savings accounts and things like that, it's then declared as unclaimed property, and they can lose, that money. And the state treasurer was involved in trying to hook up those individuals with that property, establishing a website in that area, but also going out and reaching out to communities and letting them know where the website was, to check whether they had unclaimed property, and so forth. I actually know someone, which is interesting, who actually had unclaimed property, who went out to that website, found that was listed there, didn't know it was listed there, and found it was listed there, and got the money.
Well, yeah, and, you know, state treasurers in other states, some have much more high-profile roles. Sometimes you see state treasurers in the headlines a lot weighing into political issues. So does it vary from state to state?
Yes. What's happened in Wisconsin is that all the duties that I've mentioned and others have been removed from the treasurer's office. And so the idea is that the treasurer is simply a vessel now of nothing. There's not much there. And so consequently, there are about five other states that have eliminated the treasurer's office. So the argument of eliminating the treasurer's office is that, look, there's not much to do there. The salary is about $70,000, and let's save that money, and let's eliminate the treasurer. That's on one hand. On the other hand is, well, yeah, we have a state treasurer. It is publicly elected, and it's a good office to create some check on that of the expenditures of the administration. So most of these offices that I just mentioned, or most of the functions that I mentioned, have been moved to the Department of Administration. And the Department of Administration, of course, is directly under the governor. And so there's nobody, at least in terms of a publicly elected official, to check the governor and the governor's expenditure. We do have in the legislature the Legislative Audit Bureau. I mean, they can look at various areas. But the idea that the treasurer would be somewhat of a check, some people consider important. And although the office right now probably is not, but one could clearly, the Constitution says there shall be a treasurer, but the offices were created, but the functions were created by statute. So you could take all these, you could take a number of statutory functions, such as checking on the governor and reviewing the accounts and doing auditing and things like that, and reintroduce them in the treasurer's office and make it to a vital treasurer's office. There's no reason you couldn't go in the other direction and to have some check, and especially when there's significant corruption around the state, around the country, I should say. We've had a lot of individuals sent to jail, not to mention the state right below Wisconsin. And so, therefore, some office to check on the expenditures is important. Most private organizations have such a thing. Mm-hmm. Like that. In other words, they don't allow the individual who writes the check to review the accounts that come from the bank. They usually divide those functions. And this would
kind of creating a checks and balance system.
Right, to create that, exactly. Create a check and balance if somebody, you know, looks at the books and makes sure it's being expended correctly.
UW-Stevens Point political scientist Ed Miller is our guy talking about the state treasurer. Do you think we should love it or leave it? 800-642-1234. The current state treasurer, Matt Adamczyk, ran for office on the platform of eliminating the position. Let's take a listen.
That's just not reality. To say what an office could be is not what it is. And so I'm working in the, you know, where we're at today in reality, and the reality says we have an office that's been stripped of duties, so why keep it?
So, Ed, weigh in here. Why would someone run on the platform to eliminate an office?
Well, I mean, they can run, and it's a $70,000 job, as I say, and so they've noticed that the treasurer should be eliminated. We have another office that's similar to that, and that the person didn't run that eliminated, and that's the Secretary of State's office. The Secretary of State's office did have a number of functions, including ethics and the like, but right now all the functions have now been removed from the Secretary of State. So they keep the corporate records, but other than that, that's about it. So actually the Secretary of State's office is probably a less significant office and more of an administrative office than could the treasurer. But the Secretary of State's office is another one of those offices that they have attempted to eliminate the powers of that office. Just like the treasurer, they've moved all the functions that they had out of those offices. They've also moved all their personnel out of the offices, and so the staff is non-existent in these offices. And so you would wind up, I would assume, they would then go against the Secretary of State. The other office that does have absolutely vital functions is the Department of Public Instruction.
And let's pause right there on that point. Ed Miller, our guide, he is a UW-Stevens Point political science professor talking about the future of the state treasurer position here in Wisconsin. Your thoughts, 800-642-1234. We'll be back after a news update on the Ideas Network. You're listening to the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, talking about the state treasurer's office, the amendment that is on the ballot tomorrow. Critics of the state treasurer's amendment say the office has an important role on the Board of Commissioners of Public Lands, which manages 77,000 acres of state forests in Wisconsin. But supporters of doing away with the office are skeptical. Here's Senator Dan Fion of Fond du Lac, a sponsor of the amendment last year.
It's not the most important pressing thing out there for the state, but this is an office that is literally doing nothing but one meeting a month.
Ed Miller stays with us as we unpack this. He's a political science professor at UW-Stevens Point, co-director of the Center for the Small City. Getting your thoughts on this position at 800-642-1234. How will you vote tomorrow and why? What questions do you have about the referendum on the office of the state treasurer? Call in or email ideas@wpr.org. So, Ed Miller, what we just heard, critics of this amendment say the office has this important role on the Board of Commissioners of Public Lands. So tell us a bit about that role sitting on that board.
Well, I mean, it's a board in terms of selling the various public lands. I think the proceeds from those lands have to go to the schools. But managing public lands is important. And what would happen is, according to the amendment, is that that the treasurer would be replaced by the lieutenant governor on that board. Now, the lieutenant governor is also part of the administration, even though technically lieutenant governor is elected, but the lieutenant governor in Wisconsin is no longer independently elected. At one time they were. So there is an independent election in the primary who is the lieutenant governor, but they run together, the parties run together in the, just like president and vice president run together in the general elections. And the reason that change was made to avoid having a governor of one party and a lieutenant governor of another. The lieutenant governor has also virtually no responsibilities. The only responsibilities the lieutenant governor has technically is to wait for the governor to die or to resign. And at one time, the lieutenant governor actually was technically the president of the Senate. Just like the vice president is the president of the U.S. Senate, the lieutenant governor was. But that was removed by a constitutional amendment in I think it was about 1980, that role. So lieutenant governor is another one that has no function whatsoever that is a specific function. That the whatever the governor assigns the lieutenant governor, one governor assigned his lieutenant governor to be the head of the Department of Development with the idea that they were really interested in economic development, and so they showed the importance of it. The lieutenant governor was also made simultaneously the secretary of that department. Some other states have done a similar kind of thing. In Wisconsin, as I understand it, didn't work out very well, and it's never been done since.
Well, Matt in Wausau emailed, he said, the attempt to alter the Wisconsin Constitution and eliminate the state treasurer is another shameless power grab by Republicans. Matt says they've removed every check and balance our state had. The Government Accountability Board, the GAB, the Wisconsin Supreme Court, the Office of the Treasurer is the latest thorn in their side. So, Matt, having a very much a political view of this referendum.
Right, and it seems to be, it's turning into that. It seems to be the Republicans are in favor of removing it, and there's some Democrats who are in favor of retaining it. And certainly not because of its current function, but because of its potentiality. And the fact is that there is no check other than the legislature, but the legislature is also Republican. And so when you have the same party in office, they're less likely to actually check the administration.
Well, McKinsey emailed with a question for you. McKinsey asks, is it true that the elimination of the state treasurer's office will in some way impact state employees' receipt of their pensions under the Walker administration? Do you have any knowledge of this?
No, I don't. No, as far as I'm aware, that has absolutely nothing to do with the pension. The pension is essentially administered by the employees' trust fund, which is entirely separate agency.
Well, one of the critics of the amendment is former Republican Treasurer Jack Voight, who says that the removal of the office consolidates more power in the governor's office, and he thinks that's a mistake. Let's listen to him.
Our Constitution is very important. It's almost like our political Bible of our state. It's our foundation of our existence, and we should not be tampering with that.
So Voight there is concerned tampering with the Constitution has implications. What about that concern?
Well, I mean, the concern about tampering with the Constitution is a misunderstanding of certainly the Wisconsin Constitution. The Wisconsin Constitution, as they say, we still have the original Constitution, but it's been amended unbelievably number of times. And so the Wisconsin Constitution really probably should be rewritten. And in this atmosphere of polarization in Wisconsin, maybe it's not a good time to do this. But there was a meeting several years ago at Marquette of political scientists and lawyers, and they were talking about doing a revision of the Wisconsin Constitution, modernizing the Constitution. And so the Constitution has been changed many, many, many times. The original Constitution, you know, that Wisconsin had when it became a state in 1848, said you couldn't borrow any money. The state couldn't borrow any money. Of course, the state borrows money all the time. And so they've amended over the years. You can't borrow money except for, and so on and so forth. And so the original Constitution, you know, the idea that you have a Constitution, you can't touch the Constitution, certainly isn't true in Wisconsin with the multiple amendments that we have made over the years to the Constitution. So we certainly don't have the Constitution we had in 1848, and so the argument is that we really need to clean up that Constitution. But one thing I was talking about is in the Constitution is the Department of Public Instruction. That is in the Constitution. There's a section in it that provides for it, as well as the superintendent. Well, Governor Thompson wanted to do the same thing. He wanted to get rid of the superintendent of public instruction and make that individual directly appointed by him. And so he put in the budget to create a secretary of education and a department of education. We are the only state without a school board. And so he was pressed to do that. He's got to have some kind of check. And so he agreed to a school board in that amendment. Well, that bill, it was part of the budget, that passed. But the Supreme Court of Wisconsin threw it out because it says the Constitution said there shall be a Department of Public Instruction. So he would have had to go in the other direction and eliminated the public instruction first by constitutional amendment. Then he could have created his Department of Education. But that's this idea of being responsible to the governor. So the only two significant offices which aren't is the Attorney General's office. They run independently. And the Department of Public Instruction, as they say, the other offices have no functions: lieutenant governor, secretary of state, as well as the treasurer.
Let's run through some scenarios, Ed Miller. What happens if voters don't pass the amendment?
Well, if voters don't pass the amendment, the treasurer's office remains. The And so that would stay there. And then the future legislatures would have to decide whether to give it any functions. And some people believe it should be given functions. It should be given some kind of observation of the administration in terms of financial aspect. One question about that is that people don't know who's running for treasurer, so it's directly elected, and so the idea of being responsible to the people may be questionable because the people don't know anything about the office or who was there. One alternative to that would be to eliminate the treasurer's office as a directly elected office and having the treasurer appointed by the legislature, and some states have done that, and then the treasurer has some kind of independent role, but is appointed by the legislature to essentially oversight the administration in that area. But if they simply don't do it, it would exist in the Constitution just like the Secretary of State's office does.
Well, this brings us to the question of the spring election, because it's typically a lower turnout election. Do you think that will have an impact on this vote, on this ballot item?
Well, yeah, I think it will. I think it's more likely to pass in the spring election, only because you typically get in the primary election more Republicans voting than Democrats. If you argue that Democrats want to keep this and are looking at this as a particular check on the Walker administration, of course, it really isn't a check now on the Walker administration because everything's been removed from the office. But people, just the name, the Secretary of Treasury, may support it because of that, who want to check. But those who support the Walker administration may then go and vote to get rid of the office. So a lower turnout election, you're more likely probably to see this office eliminated, essentially tomorrow.
Why did they decide to hold this a ballot item this election? Could they have chosen another election, the fall election, where there would be heavier turnout?
I think they could have. I think they had the option of what ballot to put it on. Constitutional amendments in Wisconsin do not need a super majority in either the legislature or the electorate. See, many states have it where you have to pass the legislature like by a two-thirds vote or something mm-hmm. like this before it goes on the ballot. But in Wisconsin, it's simply the legislature has to pass any constitutional amendment in two different sessions of the legislature, and then it goes on the ballot and only a majority need to support it. Some states, it's a little stronger than that. Some states, it has to be a majority to change constitutional provisions. Has to be a majority of those voting in the election, because a number of people who vote in the election, who will vote in the election, will not vote for that office. Question on the ballot.
Right. Right?
They won't vote for it. So it's called ballot roll-off. And so those people in those states that require a majority, that those would be counted as simply not voting.
Well, while we have you on the line, another issue voters face tomorrow involves the Wisconsin Supreme Court, Judge Michael Scrinock and Judge Rebecca Dallet heading off there. We'll hear more about the state of the case in a piece from WPR News next. But, Ed, what has struck you about this race for the Wisconsin Supreme Court?
Well, there's been a number of TV commercials, and those commercials, those ads are coming, or a lot of those ads, anyway, are being paid for by outside individuals. Now, this is, outside Wisconsin. And so these are organizations outside of Wisconsin that are trying to make sure that the Supreme Court remains a conservative Supreme Court as it is now. On the other side of the coin, they want to try to balance the Supreme Court with putting someone who is more moderate on the court. The court at one time, just recently, not that long ago, was there the more moderate elements outnumbered the conservative elements, but then that's been whittled away, and the court has, in more recent times, been pretty conservative and supportive of the Walker administration. So what we have is there's some constitutional questions about the Walker administration and Walker's campaign, what it's done, and the Supreme Court has pretty much just signed off on that. And some people would like to see a check. And so that's the particular argument with regard to the court.
We have to stop you there, Ed. Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Ed Miller is a political science professor at UW Stevens Point, co-director of the Center for the Small City, joining us to talk. Look at the Office of the State Treasurer. Voters will decide in tomorrow's election whether to strike it from the state constitution or to maintain the office. So tomorrow, voters will head to the polls to choose Wisconsin's next Supreme Court justice. The race between judges Rebecca Dallet and Michael Skrenak have been overtly partisan than any in recent memory. As Sean Johnson reports, it reflects an evolution of judicial campaigns that began in earnest with another Supreme Court contest a decade ago.
In 2008, former state Supreme Court Justice Lewis Butler was the candidate favored by Democrats. He was running during a two-year Democratic wave, and an incumbent justice had not lost in Wisconsin in more than 40 years. And yet Butler was defeated that year by now-Justice Michael Gableman, providing the template for how to win and lose Supreme Court races in Wisconsin. University of Wisconsin-Madison politics and law professor Howard Schwaber says the race was transformative.
2008 marks the beginning of the conversion of Wisconsin judicial politics to just an extension of partisan politics by other means.
Schwaber says Butler was old school. In this 2008 debate with Gableman, Butler avoided saying political things.
I think it is inappropriate for a judge or a justice to tell you that I'm a conservative or a liberal, or if I'm a candidate of big business or law enforcement or labor or whoever, because you're trying to send the signal that if you vote with me, I'll vote with you. And that's not what the justice system is all about.
Gableman was more willing to label himself and label Butler repeatedly.
I am a judicial conservative. My opponent has been legislating from the bench.
Choice between me, a judicial conservative, and my opponent, a judicial activist.
I am a judicial conservative who gives a fair application to the plain language of the law, and my opponent has been acting as a judicial activist.
Gableman's victory flipped control of the Wisconsin Supreme Court. Schwaber says other conservatives used a similar formula. Today, they hold a 5-2 majority.
In the Gableman cycle and for several cycles thereafter, the Democrats were very, very slow to catch on.
Gableman is not running for re-election this year, but the conservative candidate, Sauk County Judge Michael Skrenak, is hitting similar notes.
To put it simply, the role of a judge is to be an arbiter of the law, not a policy analyst or a political activist. So the dangers of a court legislating from the bench.
This time, the liberal candidate, Milwaukee County Judge Rebecca Dallet, is finding new ways to hit back.
He would be a rubber stamp to the interests of the governor, the interests of the Republican Party, and the interests of the people. We have to have a court that we have confidence in that's going to be making the decisions and not being a rubber stamp to the governor or to the executive. And further politicize the judiciary as Scott Walker's rubber stamp.
Dallet has also been willing to identify with Democrats, speaking at their state convention, marching for gun control, and receiving endorsements from big names like former Vice President Joe Biden. At a San Francisco fundraiser, she told the audience that their values were Wisconsin values that had been lost along the way. Skrenak has seized on that.
Well, as I've been traveling the state since then, people have come up to me and said, San Francisco values are not my values.
But Skrenak's campaign has also evolved. The state's business lobby is running ads on his behalf, as it did for Gableman. But Skrenak has also received more than $300,000 from the Republican Party, which is a first in Wisconsin's officially nonpartisan judicial elections. Dallet says that means he can't be independent.
People don't just give money away. They have an expectation. And I think the viewers all understand that. I think the people in our state understand that. That there is some investment that these groups are making in you in order to get you on the court so that you'll do their bidding.
A decade ago, Gableman defeated Butler by just 22,000 votes statewide. He went on to write landmark opinions that upheld Governor Walker's Act 10 and that shut down an investigation into Walker's campaign. Whoever wins tomorrow's election will have the opportunity to serve until at least 2028, giving them the chance to write the landmark rulings of the next decade. Sean Johnson, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Coming up, what's going on in your community that you feel like nobody's talking about? That's one of the questions WPR News is asking as part of its latest project called Beyond the Ballot. We'll get the latest on this project after the news. And we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What is the single most important issue to you in this election and why? Call in right after this news.